up on the front porch a little magic.
So much of the performance is geared at trying to have people let go of their hang-ups about magic and allow them to experience it as a theatrical experience. I like to play with my audiences.
Andrew Pinard is a magician and entertainer who lives in Bradford. He's been called the best magician in the state. He'll talk about what makes a good show, how a magician makes a living, and whether Harry Houdini was a magician or something else. Also, behind the scenes at a community theater. M.T. Menino of the Capital Center for the Arts on the history of the building, the art and business of running your enterprise, and what a theater does for a community. I'm John Walters. Pull up a chair on the front porch on NHPR. Today on the front porch, we don't have a rabbit in a hat or a woman in a box or even a tank full of water in a straitjacket, but we do have a magician. Andrew Pinard lives in Bradford, and last year, New Hampshire Magazine named him the state's best magical entertainer, and he's here to provide a glimpse behind the curtain. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
When did you start with magic? Did you have one of those magic kits when you were a kid?
Actually, when I was a child, I was very interested in magic. I was, to some extent, introverted, and I spent a lot of time reading as a child. And probably the first performance I ever gave was actually in the second grade for my second grade assembly. So I was interested in magic at a very early age, but I got out of magic, so to speak, about the fifth grade or so when I studied music and theater, and I actually went to college for music and theater. And it wasn't until after I got out of college that I kind of rediscovered magic.
You actually were a theater teacher for quite a while.
Yes, I taught theater for 5 years at Pembroke Academy, and I still do occasional consulting work and still work with regional theaters and as well as some high schools.
The decision to become a full-time magician must have been a little tough.
Actually, it came about almost as an evolution of what was happening. I kind of found that I was doing more and more magic over time and less theater, and it just got too hard to try to sustain both. And the magic performances were sustaining me creatively and also financially as well.
Does the theater background feed into your performance?
I think I'm in a wonderful position being a magician coming from a theater background. The majority of people who become professional magicians, or even those who are interested in it as a hobby, as an amateur, get into magic and don't have any theatrical background. And so they're almost at a disadvantage because they have to learn all this stuff as they go along and through trial and error. And I find because of my theater background, it allows me the opportunity to look at what I do a lot differently than most other performers would. And most of my performances are very based in the theater as far as storytelling is a major component of what I do as part of my performances. Plus, I try to look at all the elements that contribute to a performance, from the ambiance that can be created from lighting or sound or even such simple things as choice of props and costumes.
How much of being a good magician is just the trick, and how much of it is those other elements that you try to bring in?
We have an argument in the magic community, method versus effect. Method being obviously how the thing works, or the trick, so to speak, and effect, which is essentially how the audience responds and what the audience is aware of, how they perceive what happens. So many people think the secret is the most important part of magic, and for me, it's such a small part. It's about the experience. It's about the performance and the presentation. As a magician, and actually I prefer the term magical entertainer, I find that it's more important to try to get your audiences to play, to become part of the shared experience that is the performance. And a major hurdle sometimes in a magical performance is people who come to the table and they've heard that you're a magician, or they've experienced a magician in the past, perhaps, that didn't take the tact that the performance was the main thing. So they come to it as if it's a puzzle, or they come to it as if they feel they're going to be challenged in some way or put down, and they may have had a bad experience somewhere along the line with what I refer to as a crazy Uncle Charlie syndrome. Almost everybody has a crazy Uncle Charlie who does a card trick where they lay down 37 cards in three piles, and about 4.5 hours later they reveal what the card was, and by that point everyone's asleep.
So when you say magical entertainer, that's sort of not just having a series of tricks one after another, but sort of building something over the course of an evening or over the course of a performance?
Over the course of my performance, whether I'm doing a 7-minute routine at a resort for a table, or if I'm performing the full stage show, which runs about an hour and 45 minutes, the goal is to provide an ongoing experience that builds to a logical conclusion that helps to sweep the audience away. So much of the performance is, again, geared at trying to have people let go of their hang-ups about magic and allow them to experience it as a theatrical experience and to have fun with it. Essentially, I like to play with my audiences. I like to get them involved. It's a very interactive experience, whether I'm on a stage for 1,000 people or if I'm in a corporate meeting presenting a training program, or even if I'm performing for 4 people. It's about getting everybody involved.
And you try to create magic in different settings and create different kinds of performances. You do the corporate routines. You appear in small clubs and restaurants. You appear on stages. And one thing that interested me was reconstruction, recreation of a 19th century seance.
Yeah, An Evening with the Spirits is a presentation we've done for the last 4 years, and I've performed it at a number of bed and breakfasts and also some larger hotels, and I've actually, some of the magicians' organizations have hired me to come in and perform it for them because it's an offshoot of what one would consider an interest within the magic community.
That must be a real compliment to be asked to perform for magicians, and a challenge, too.
It is a challenge. Magicians look at things a whole different way. They are far less interested in playing and letting themselves be caught up into it, and far more interested in methodology. And to be able to take a room full of magicians and kind of break them from that experience and let them experience it as a theatrical performance is quite a challenge. But by the same token, it's a very gratifying experience when you can fool a magician and take them to that point where all of a sudden logical reality flip-flops and everything that they know and understand has all of a sudden gone out the window.
Now, when you do a seance, is that to simulate a spiritual presence?
The seance itself is presented in the historical context. There's been an enormous amount of research put in developing the seance, and I leave it up to the individuals who attend the seance to come to the table with whatever their personal belief system is. My position is that I'm not there to confirm or deny anyone's belief system, but to put this across as it would have occurred around the turn of the last century as opposed to the turn of this century. Within the seances themselves, in the performance, I've had a number of occasions where things have happened that haven't been under my control, that have been unexpected during what we refer to as the dark portion of the seance, where all the lights are out and things. And it has been a little eerie and things that I don't have explanations for as well. I would like to believe that there is an enormous world out there of possibilities and opportunities and things that we'll never know. And I'm interested in establishing a connection with people's sense of wonder and of the excitement of the unknown.
I'm John Walters. You're on the front porch on NHPR with magician Andrew Pinard. Now, Andrew, you came with I keep using the word trick, and I guess that's not really the word you prefer to use for these things.
I prefer plot. Coming from the theater background that I have, each of these effects have a plot to it that the audience perceives, just like the plot in a theater piece. Tricks are certainly, some people review it as being a derogatory term, but it's common parlance, so anything is fine by me.
If you tell someone you're going to do a plot, they don't know what you're talking about. But that does sort of encompass the whole experience, not just the actual manipulation of the card or the ball or the rabbit or whatever.
Very much so.
So what do you have for us here?
Well, I brought along a little experiment that I'd like to try with you, John, and it's basically, it involves our minds, and it involves how we think and the direction that we take. And what I'm going to ask you to do, if you would, is to think of, don't think of a number, but I'd like you to think of either odd or even. So you have a choice of either odd or even. So if you're thinking right now, if I was able to tell you whether you were thinking of odd or even, it would be kind of a 50-50 chance whether I got it right. Now, I think you're thinking odd. Am I correct?
Why, yes.
Well,
and I mean it.
There you go. But we don't want to let it stop there, because at that point, I had a 50-50 chance, and it's possible that I could have done anything. So what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think of an odd number between 1 to 10. And what I'm going to do is I have a card here that I'm going to hold up, and it has 10 different things written on it. And I would like you to look at the number that you're thinking of and read whatever the word is or phrase to yourself and keep it in your head. I'm not going to look at the card, and I'm not going to look at your eyes so that I can't see where you're looking. So I'm going to hold the card up, and if you please remember the word or phrase that's at that number. Have you got it?
Yes.
Okay. Now, at this point, if I were able to tell you that number, there's a possibility, again, of chance entering into it. And in fact, if I could tell you the word or phrase, again, that would correlate to the number. So I want to get beyond the point of just the word or phrase that you're thinking at and into the realm of free association. I'm going to tell you a list of things right now, and I want you to just remember one, the one that pertains most to the word or phrase that you're thinking of. And here they are. Blue felt tip pen, special delivery postage stamp, shining silver carving knife, yellow ball of yarn, original oil painting, old felt hat, South Sea Island, Western stagecoach, antique clock, and China coffee cup. Now, are you thinking of one of those items or places or at this
yes.
point? Okay. What we're going to attempt to do at this point, because this is free association and you could have selected any of these, I am going to attempt to, well, one would say read your mind. I want you to imagine, to visualize the object you're thinking of or place that you're thinking of, and think of it in terms of size or in breadth. I feel like the object that is an object that you're thinking of, and I believe it's perhaps even small enough to fit in your hands. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right, I want you to visualize it even more. I want you to cup your hands and imagine that the object is lying there in the palm of your hands. And I want you to look at it, the shape and the form and the size and the substance, and actually feel the weight in your hands. Can you feel the object in your hands?
Yes.
Well, I want you to be very careful because I don't want you to cut yourself on the knife. Is that the object you're thinking of?
Yes, it is.
Now, you may think that that's possibly mind reading, but John, believe it or not, I actually knew ahead of time how you were going to think. So this goes a realm beyond simply reading your mind to actually precognition of what you were going to select. In fact, what I'd like to do is have the engineer dial up my home answering machine, and we're going to have you listen to the answering machine, if you would.
Absolutely Magic, featuring award-winning performer and creative consultant Andrew J. Pinard. If you're looking for a unique way to promote your product or service or exciting entertainment for your next event, please leave your name, telephone number, and a brief message after the tone. For more information, check out our website at absomagic.com. That's absomagic.com. Thanks for calling Absolutely Magic. And on an unrelated note, John Walters, were you perhaps thinking of a shining silver carving knife? Please leave a message.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I was thinking of a shining silver carving knife. And I won't ask you how you did that.
That's good. I can't tell you. I'd have to kill you, and it would only be fun for me. I mean, fun, it wouldn't be fun for either of us.
This has been the last edition of The Front Porch.
More with magician and entertainer Andrew Pinard after a break, and later, behind the scenes at the Capital Center for the Arts. I'm John Walters. You're on The Front Porch on NHPR. It's The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters. More now with magician and entertainer Andrew Pinard. You mentioned earlier a debate in the magic community between those who talk about the trick and those who talk about the whole experience. Who's who?
I think the majority of professional performers, the people who are out there making a living doing this for real people, would often argue that effect is the strongest and most important part of this, because ultimately you want people to walk away from your performance having experienced something completely impossible and something that really takes them and makes them wonder. The experience of a good performance of a magic trick results in the audience's mind basically flip-flopping. At one point, you've established how the world works. You've established this framework of what's going to happen, and then all of a sudden, everything drops out from under you. And for a wonderful moment, it feels like you're floating in midair and everything that you know falls. to some people, that's an uncomfortable feeling because they look at it as being a challenge to their intellect or their person, whereas I look at that type of experience as being opening up the door to possibilities. At that moment, when they realize that something completely impossible has happened, that means that there are other possible things that they might have considered impossible that they can do.
If you ask people to name a magician, they'd all say Houdini, or almost all of them. Was he a magician? And how does he reflect or maybe limit what you mean by magic?
Houdini was the world's first true celebrity, as far as what we'd consider today the mass media type of celebrity. Houdini enjoyed magic. He started as a magician working the tent shows and the dime store museums, the old, really what we'd consider today the lowest possible performance venues possible. And it wasn't until he added the challenge aspect to the act, primarily the escapes and the challenges from box makers and policemen. This challenge aspect ignited the imagination of the American public. And that is what caused Houdini to become a household word. Plus, he essentially invented the whole self-promotion campaign. And anybody who is trying to promote themselves, you know, would be well served to study Houdini's techniques. Although, to some extent, I think most people think of Houdini when they think of magicians, they don't really know why they think of Houdini. Houdini is a very important part of the history of magic, but I don't think, and I think most of my compeers, so to speak, would agree with me that he wasn't really a magician. He was primarily an escape artist, and he did ignite the imagination, and he did confound a lot of people as to how he managed to accomplish his goals. But I think Houdini, in his own press materials, was the first one to say that everything he did was accomplished through natural methods, not through any sort of supernatural ability.
Well, the big names of today are the ones who light up the really big stages, like David Copperfield and people like that. How does that compare to what you do or what you want to do?
I primarily perform sleight-of-hand close-up magic, but my favorite type of performances are those when I'm working for a very small group, because the people are as close as possible to me. They can reach out and touch the props, the equipment, or whatever happens to be on the table. And what's wonderful about it is that they feel like they can't be fooled because they're that close. They can't experience a magic moment being that close. And so when they do, their response is much, much, much more a much stronger response than you would have anticipated, you know, by someone sitting in a dark auditorium watching somebody on stage. The other thing that I like about it is that you have instant feedback, and every performance is different because I'm shaping everything for that particular audience. Some people will play a little more loud and a little more boisterous. Some people like to sit back and watch. And occasionally you get the person who wants to challenge you to some extent, and you take advantage of that and you move it along. And the people who challenge you, if you fool them, you're even get a stronger response than you perhaps would have if they just sat back.
Do you ever use a rabbit?
No. No, actually, I...
Do you stay away from things that are the stereotypes, the woman in the box and the rabbit and the straitjacket and all that sort of thing?
I try to stay away from material that people may have seen someplace else. I create a lot of my own magic because I want people to experience things for the first time. That's the strongest experience they can have. And I will often, when I'm performing at a restaurant, have a person say, "Oh, I saw a magician who did this. Can you..." And, you know, I may be ready to perform that effect, but I won't perform it for them because they've seen it and it's not new and it's not exciting for them. So I will share with them something that's different and something that they won't ever possibly experience again. And again, I think magic is so much about creating this special experience, this shared experience between the performer and the audience, that most performers do themselves a disservice to confine themselves to a repertoire of material that everybody else is doing.
Well, thanks very much for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Andrew Pinard, the best magician in New Hampshire, or the best magical performer in New Hampshire, according to New Hampshire Magazine. He has a website, absomagic.com. You can link to it from our website, nhpr.org.
Magician, magician, take me upon your wings and gently roll the clouds away.